sound. Logic podcast. Two guys with no credentials. Reviewing Rolling
Stone 500. Greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again here on the Sound Logic Podcast. And today we're discussing album number 90, Finnish 90, on the Rolling Stone magazine top 500 greatest album list. This is After the Gold Rush by fellow Canadian Neil Young. Sailing hardships through.
Yeah, tell me why we don't have more Canadians on this list.
Well done. Well done. Have you been saving that for 90 albums?
Yeah, exactly. It just coincided with the opening track. Perfectly worked out.
It's funny, as doing some prep and just typing some things out, we have created, well, Ben created, and we've added to kind of a spreadsheet we can go to, which has all the albums, all the rankings for all the iterations, and we can sort it and manipulate it if we want to find stuff. And there's not a whole lot of extra things except the Canadian artists. Ben has made that text red. Yeah. That's the only thing we've done.
At a quick glance.
Yeah, we know. And it's sad that there's not many artists in red text. But
it's true.
This one is. Really excited to talk about Neil Young again. Another great Canadian artist who is maybe not Canadian anymore. I don't know.
Oh, really? Did he renounce it? I don't know.
I think at least he's a permanent resident.
Sure.
Of the U.S. Because even at this time, he was living in 1970. He was living in California. Well, before I start talking too much about Neil and this era, should I just go through some details?
Yeah, I think
probably a good idea. Details. All right, so this album, After the Gold Rush, was released September 19th. Happy birthday, Ben.
Yeah.
19th.
Did we just have a December 18th album? Was like not long ago? Didn't we just say it was your birthday? But
it's somebody's birthday. Well, I can't remember which one. There was like, oh, it's a birthday. I know.
Yeah. Just 12 years before I was born.
Yes. September 19th, 1970. This was Neil's third studio album. Solo. Because he was in an early band, Buffalo Springfield, and then Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. But this is his third solo studio album. All songs written by Neil Young, except Oh Lonesome Me, written by Don Gibson. Charted number 8 in the US, number 7 in the UK. Sales to date approaching 3 million. Not astronomically high, but certainly nothing to laugh at.
That's funny.
This album originally conceived as a soundtrack to an apocalyptic film by Dean Stockwell and Herb Berman of the same name, which was never produced. I had never heard this before. You heard this, Ben?
No. It's kind of an interesting thing. And like
After the Gold Rush.
After the Gold Rush, for something that has become so iconically Neil Young, to sort of imagine it as a soundtrack to a film that never got made. I'm a casual fan of Bell and Sebastian. I think they've come up a time or two on this podcast, and they wrote a soundtrack to a film that they had envisioned, and for years and years and years that soundtrack was just another Bell and Sebastian album, until a few years ago when they actually filmed the movie. Oh, they had enough money, I think, to go and do it. So it'd be interesting. There's a much bigger gap here now, but if someone went and said, yeah, we've got a script now, let's put it to the soundtrack.
it's like, I know this is slightly different, but an album we reviewed not too long ago, David Bowie's Station to Station.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in a movie called the Man Who Came From the Sky or something, about an alien.
Yep.
And he wanted to do the soundtrack, but they said no. Then so he did Station to Station, which wasn't really the soundtrack, but the album cover is a still image from the movie.
From the movie, yeah.
So it's like the opposite. Anyways, don't want to digress too much. Yeah. These next two points are interesting. They're linked. So I'm going to do them in kind of reverse order. So this album is one of four high-profile albums, which all went to the top 15 of the charts, released by each of the members of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. After Deja Vu came out the same year, which is another... I actually have both those on vinyl.
Mm. Yeah, so good.
My After the Gold Rush copy is really bad. I'll have to get a better one. Got it at a thrift store. Anyways, Stephen Stills did a self-titled album, November 1970. David Crosby did If I Could Only Remember My Name, February 71. And Graham Nash did Songs for Beginners, May 1971. So all four of them each did...
writing that
solo
wave.
Albums and I think that are there appearances by those members? No. Yeah, Stephen Stills does some vocals on this album, but a lot of the harmonies just sounds like those harmonies. Mm-hmm. And so I say that one, and then Neil Young imagined for this album to bring together Crazy Horse, his backing band, with Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Again, building on the success of Deja Vu, but as they developed, they did some early sessions with Crazy Horse, and as he went through developing it, it really became more apparent that this would be a solo album, and I think that makes sense. There's some songs that sound more like a group thing, but some that sound more like a solo performance, like the opening mm-hmm. track, Tell Me Why, sounds more like a solo thing with some accompaniments.
Yeah, it's funny because Neil is one of the members of CSNY that seems to be given kind of solo-ish sounding songs on their CSNY albums.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's funny that he would, you know, be known for that already and then still want to bring the guys along for this project too. Apparently, we'll get to the cover in just a bit, but the original image is... him and Graham Nash, and
oh, interesting.
Graham got cropped out of it for the
oh, the like he's in. Day. He's it's not a different picture. It's like he's in the picture.
He was just like a little bit off. Like had they cropped it wider, he would have been there too.
That's funny. I didn't know that. That's great. I really like that. Okay, two singles. Only Love Can Break Your Heart, and When You Dance, I Can Really Love. They went to number 33 and 93 respectively on Billboard Hot 100. In 2014, this album was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame, which I'm sure a few of his albums have been. Haven't looked that up. I don't usually read things straight off a article or website, but I liked this next piece, so I'll just read these this paragraph for you here. Critics were not immediately impressed. The 1970 review in Rolling Stone magazine by Langdon Winner was negative, with Winner feeling that, quote, none of the songs here rise above the uniformly dull surface, end quote. Village Voice critic Robert Christgau, who's we've mentioned many times, was more enthusiastic, saying, quote, while David Crosby yowls about assassinations, Young divulges darker agonies without even bothering to make them explicit. Here, the gaunt pain of Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere fills out a little, the voice softer, the jangling guitar muted behind a piano. Young's melodies, every one of them, are impossible to dismiss. He can write poetic lyrics without falling flat on his metaphor, even when the subject is ecology or crumbling empire. And despite his acoustic tenor, he rocks plenty. A real rarity, pleasant and hard at the same time. End quote. Critical reception has improved with time. By 1975, Rolling Stone was referring to the album as a masterpiece. And Gold Rush is now considered a classic album in Young's recording career. So that's a few contrasting reviews from when it came out. And I like what... Christgau said about the lyrical content. You know, we've got Southern Man, we've got After the Gold Rush, political, racial issues, ecological issues. Look at Mother Nature on the Run in the 1970s. So really really. I mean, he's always been an outspoken, you know, protest kind of person, right? Civil rights and all that stuff. But I really like that.
Another example of Canadians coming and singing about Southern culture. Similar to the band. And not being laughed at. I don't know what it is about these Canadian artists that have this ability. You know, one of the Joni Mitchell albums that I've gotten into since discovering Blue, there's the opening track of it, Morning Morgantown. It's a song about a small town in West Virginia. Like, what does Joni Mitchell have to do of anything in, you know, Appalachia? And yet here she is writing this beautiful, heartbreaking song about life in Appalachia. There must be something in our DNA that makes us patient observers or something, and able to speak to things that we see. And maybe it's the mystique of the U.S. too, that there's this big brother just south that's always swaggering around, and every once in a while there's maybe something that polite Canadians do want to raise their hand and say, oh yeah, but what about this little thing over here?
That's an interesting point, and I do think of that sometimes as kind of a, I'm not trying to be mean when I say this, kind of a spectator, almost watching a show at times. And there's some things that affect us very directly, you know, when, you know, a president changes tariffs, you know, or something like that, which happened very recently, and other things that affect us, you know, changing NAFTA to the U.S. MCA, something like that. But there are other things that don't directly affect us, and it's kind of like, did you see what's happening down there?
Right.
But
right.
I can only imagine, coming from that perspective, and then let's talk about Neil Young joining, like, especially back then, even now, but especially back then, is then joining this scene, which would be very American, and everything's happening in the U.S., all your major tours and your recording studios, everything, being immersed in this American culture must be a very interesting perspective. And maybe, yeah, you'd have different insights having not grown up and just maybe being accustomed to certain things, coming in going, hey, like, you guys aren't okay with this, right? Like, this is this is a problem, kind of. I can see some people saying, well, it's just always been like that, you know, it's that's the way it is, you know. No, I'm gonna talk about it. I don't know, I'm speculating all this, you know. This is not something he's ever said that I'm aware of, but
well, here's two interesting Canadians sitting around without much credentials trying to speculate wildly too every week, so
yep.
Something in our DNA that says we can we have permission to do that.
I mean, you're as we've discussed, you're now at the point, Ben, where you've lived in the U.S. longer than you lived in Canada, so maybe you have you have more license to chime in on these things now. Being immersed in it, very involved in a lot of the issues. Anything else on the album before we move to this cover here?
I don't think so.
Just a quick aside, I didn't have the time to really look into this image. It's a photo. It's a beautiful. It's an intriguing photo. It's black and white with a bit of contrast on it. Like, you can see it on Neil's face. It's like the almost like a negative.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm sure there's people who, photographers screaming saying, ah, it's called this, but I'm not a photographer. It appears that Neil's there's almost like a wrought iron fence behind him.
Yeah.
In front of a brick building. It looks like he's walking on a sidewalk. He's walking to the left. I've always found this very interesting. Just behind him, you can just see her face. There's like an old lady walking the other way.
Just tucked right in there.
Yeah. And as you had mentioned, that somewhere just off the frame is Graham Nash, which I didn't know. And then at the very top, you can't even read it very well. It's against the brick. It's in gold, after the gold rush. Neil Young. I always find it interesting which order that is put on the album. The artist name first, or the band name first, or the title first. A lot of times I feel like it's the artist first, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
here we've got, after the Gold Rush, Neil Young.
Yep.
As if to say, by Neil Young. Music by Neil Young.
Well, I guess if it's the soundtrack, you might want the...
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
I think by the time this album was finalized, I don't think it was, but I don't know.
Did you have any info on this?
Yeah, I've got a few answers for you.
Oh, thank you.
The terminology you're looking for that photographers might be screaming at us right now is solarizing an image.
Okay.
A term I had never heard before, but apparently the photograph was taken and it was a little blurry than anyone wanted. And so they decided, well, let's enhance that look and did something called solarizing, which I guess skews the contrast to make him got that almost metallic sheen on his face there. This was taken in Greenwich Village, a district in New York City.
Yep. Okay.
Just outside New York University School of Law. And he just happened to be passing this poor old lady at the time, who winds up in the cover as well. It's interesting. I'm sure there were other images, but they chose to keep that one with her in it. I wonder if she got any compensation for it or anything like that.
I wonder if they ever even found her again.
She may not even know that she was on the cover. Who knows? The photographer's a guy named Joel Bernstein. He's got a lot of CSNY connections. He's actually a guitarist who played on a number of the CSNY family of music projects from time to time. But he's also a pretty renowned photographer. He's done the cover shot on Jackson Browne's Running on Empty, a Dylan album, the CSN album where they're on a boat lounging. That's his image as well. And his photographs have been featured in a whole bunch of other spaces as well. So pretty prominent guy, apparently. Not a name I'd ever heard of before, but this has got some meatiness to this album cover. We don't always know much about it, but this is apparently one to take stock in, take notice.
Really interesting. And as you were... talking, I found this website called Pop Spots, and it talks about the image, and then I've seen this in other things. Someone has superimposed the album cover over a modern color photo of the actual place, which is really cool. And then there's I see the picture that with Graham Nash, and there's other photos from different angles, and then a map of where exactly it is. And I imagine you could look up any photo or album cover and find it. That's kind of cool. Pop Spots. Never heard of that. Pop Spots, New York. Anyways, we digress a little bit. but really interesting. I've said it before. It's always interesting when there's an album cover that's an actual place that you could go to. As opposed to, just a shot of somebody's face, where it is, or in a studio somewhere, sound like that with a set, and it's like you could actually go and sit where that is. And a lot of people have done that or gone on different kind of journeys to try and find all these spots and sit there holding the album cover at the actual spot. Anyways, there you have it.
Someday, we've got lots of time. We'll do many from this list as we can.
We'll do that. We'll try and find the spots. I want to do the blonde on blonde one with do my hair up all crazy like Bob Dylan and find that spot where he was outside. Anyways,
you could do it almost anywhere, just make it blurry and no one would know.
I don't think you're taller than me, but maybe not quite tall enough that we could do the Bridge Over Troubled Water and I could have my face like in there front you of go. Your face.
Yeah,
you can't see your face. Anyways, okay, 11 tracks, so pretty standard, fairly short album too, right? Like maybe less than 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think right at 40. I was surprised to see, which is we
had done so many albums from this era. Maybe it's part of the reason why they produced so many because they weren't that long. I don't say that to belittle the talent or anything, but there's a lot of great songs on this album.
There is. Although I will say, maybe it's because I have this on vinyl. I enjoy the first half, the first A side, a lot more than the second. And I don't know if it's because I just haven't flipped it over enough to to really savor it as much as the first half. But
yeah. I think they're a little catchier, the tunes on the first, and a little more up tempo.
Pull you in a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of the songs on the second half are a little more melancholy. That's okay. They're really good. Man, I love starting this album because I love just the acoustic, that kind of, and the hammer-on style of picking. Number one, it's not too hard to play, so it's something I can actually play along to.
Yep.
And it's just so, to me, so quintessential Neil Young acoustic guitar playing. And I like how it builds. You know, it's just his voice and guitar at the beginning, and then you get some harmonies and other things later on. It's just a great opener. I really like it. I really Absolutely. Like it. It really, when I put it on and I go, oh yeah, I'll listen to this album, and I hear that one, then I'm reminded just how much I like the whole thing. Uh-huh. Like, oh, this is going to be great. I love this one.
I think we talked about this when we talked about Harvest, but he doesn't have a great voice, but what he does is something that Dylan does, is sings with a lot of passion.
Yeah.
I can't put this album on in the background. I've got to really like engage it because he is engaging the music so much. He's not like, I just got a John Denver album. I like some of his stuff, and that's nice music that I can that I can enjoy in the background. And this is someone sort of pouring their heart out.
Wow. Yeah.
With attitude, aggression, sort of commanding you to sit up and listen. And it's really good.
I agree. Is there something in this album, a song or a moment, that really grabs you?
I think the transition from After the Gold Rush to the sort of waltz-like tempo of Only Love Can Break Your Heart really threw me the first time that I heard it. But it's got a playfulness to it that makes me almost think of the band's Brown album, just in terms of the way that they play with music styles from time to time. And I think that was the moment where I realized, oh, there's something a bit more conceptual here than just a bunch of like aggressive rock songs from this era.
Yeah.
I would say there's a bit more musicality to this and a bit more intentionally different structure. And not surprising, Deja Vu, the CSNY album that we've already talked about, has lots of that going on too. But that's maybe the moment for me that really grabs me.
We haven't reviewed that album yet, have we?
No, it's way down. I don't know why it's not higher.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Anyways, but okay. I really like what you said about the contrast. Like a really good movie or book, an album, there needs to be a relief. Okay. You can't have just a really intense action scene or really sad scene. That's, you know, the term comic relief. You have that in movies where you'd have something really intense. You take a beat, and then there could be, you know, just a really funny joke or a lighthearted scene. And I like that. After the Gold Rush, it's a little more intense. And then you go to this playful, waltz, the 3/4 time. Just kind of like we need to just chill from that. When I asked you that question, anything jumped out. The two things came to mind. The first thing was the falsetto he uses on After the Gold Rush. And it has become more popular over the years, and some artists can do it and some can't. I think more recently, Chris Martin from Coldplay, I think very famously uses that, and others. You mentioned a bit of a bone to pick with you about saying that Neil Young doesn't have a good voice.
Okay. Pick away.
There are parts of that I want to agree with. same as if you had said about Dylan. I think if we're comparing the two, and I know we're not really, but if we are, Neil's voice is much more melodic. I think he has a little more control. I think he likes using his voice melodically more than Bob does. I think it's his tone that people have issue with, kind of very nasally.
He's nasally, very nasal, yeah, delivery. I was just gonna say that.
And people, I don't think, love that. I do like it. It's never really bothered me. I've talked to other people about, I've even sung some songs. I remember singing a Neil Young song, playing guitar, my wife, and just saying, that sounds good. I would like it if you sang it in your voice and not in Neil's voice. Because I was kind of imitating him, right?
She's like, playing into that. Yeah.
He doesn't have a nice voice. You do. Okay, well, that's flattering. I guess I was just trying to do a Neil song. But it is true. But that After the Gold Rush, man, it's chilling the way he employs that falsetto to me. I mean, maybe some people, maybe you're someone who just doesn't care for it, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I think we had some
like real soul searching when we talked about Harvest. Like, why is it that we are so enamored with Neil and so bothered by Bob Dylan?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of similarities in terms yeah. of like not a voice everyone loves. And some describe it as grating. and yet, you know, for some people, it's just the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it okay to us when Neil does it and not when Bob
yeah.
does it?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's a really good question. So that was the one thing. The other thing, you know, Southern Man. Is a song I've been familiar with for years and years and years. Very popular on the radio. Heard it growing up on our rock, classic rock radio growing up. It's so... Man, Neil is not afraid to call a spade a spade. Like, he has never been shy. He doesn't really sugarcoat anything. He's very direct. And there's something, again, so... I'll use the word again, chilling, and boy, oh boy. And you know, those kind of racial songs and ideas, they're unfortunately, they're more relevant than ever today. Mm-hmm. The context is slightly different, but a lot of the issues, a lot of the hate is still there. And mm-hmm. man, it sucks, but it just shows that we do need people who are brave enough, as Neil and others, many others, to write about it and to sing about it in, you know, a very mainstream setting. Yeah. So
yeah,
that song still just gets me when I listen.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I think we've wondered aloud a couple times here on the podcast where's the music speaking to this moment? It may just be in genres that we don't listen to a lot, but I don't hear a ton of that right now, at least not that's getting heavy sort of populist level listens. I could be wrong. I might just be overlooking it when it's happened, or maybe like a lot of things, it takes time to assess the situation, write the song, go into the studio, have it polished stuff to release it to the public. I don't know. It's perplexing to me that we can have maybe the most turbulent, polarized moment in terms of like political discourse and have kind of a, maybe it's fear. Maybe artists don't want to touch some of these things because it does get so, you get alienated if you say the wrong thing or say it in a way that people don't like or something like that.
That's what I was going to say. And I don't want to say that wasn't the case, that there was no fear back in, you know, in the 60s. And I don't know about record labels. Like, I think today, you know, there are...
cautious, probably.
Yeah. There's since you brought it up, there's an incident that happened recently where an artist did put themselves out. I don't know if you... it might have been a bigger deal in Canada, but at the NBA All-Star game this winter, do you remember what happened there?
Were you, no.
Where the, so Julie Black, who is a well-known Canadian R&B singer, and I think she's done a little bit in the U.S. Anyway, she sang the Canadian national anthem. She changed a lyric when she sang it.
Okay.
Oh, Canada, our home on native land.
Our home on native land.
Which is the original lyric is our home and native land. She changed it to our home on native land and got some feedback, sure, both negative and positive about that. She was recently, in the last few weeks, honored by the Assembly of First Nations.
Wow.
Publicly was honored for speaking that truth.
Wow.
In a extremely public and well-televised setting. I have a feeling from... I haven't done a ton of research, so I'm sorry if I'm... I have a feeling that it was her idea.
Hmm.
I don't think that it was something that someone said, hey, if we've written this, do this. I think she just did it. And they honored her. She was in tears, of course. You know, they gave her, you know, they honored her with a blanket with feathers, which is a high honor. And one of the leaders of the assembly, you know, spoke to that. So,
wow.
In response to what you said, it does still happen, but I feel like it's less, and I feel like you have to dig for it more than at the time when it was. I mean, Neil's always done that, but there were so many other, like that whole group, a lot of people he hung out with, made music with, they were all doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some solidarity. I think you really put yourself out now, as she did. I mean, she got some...
Everyone's under the microscope in a different kind of way now, too.
You know, and it travels so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You do something and it's across the world in minutes, mm-hmm, on every platform, you know, subject to every critique available. So anyways, that our rabbit trail, an interesting topic. And where are those voices today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sitting very comfortably on my couch, not down at an establishment with a sign, you know, protesting something.
sure.
You know, so I don't want to sound too hypocritical, but we do need brave people, braver than me, to do that.
Yeah.
And people to not do what I'm doing and to get up and do stuff. But anyways.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I kind of took
I like that. I like that reflection, that reminder too. I'm even thinking about like some of the, like Kendrick is doing some pretty edgy stuff too. Kendrick Lamar
In
popular music right now. It's not listened to by a lot of white people necessarily, but he's speaking his truth in ways that he can, and
He's got a bit of a history doing that.
Wasn't there a sort of tongue-in-cheek song about Trump by a Canadian band?
Yeah, Arkells. Arkells.
Yeah.
I think early in his presidency. They're there, but I think what you said earlier, they're maybe not as, you know, in the mainstream and a little more hidden for various reasons. And I think it's hard when you've achieved that status, that success. Like they say, it's hard at the top, or it's lonely at the top, or whatever they say. There is.
Well, it doesn't take a couple decades.
It doesn't
now
take much to fall off the mountain or say something wrong, and all of a sudden, you know better.
Yep. Remember how fast when the Dixie Chicks said that Bush wasn't their president. They couldn't go back and play in Texas anymore.
No.
It wasn't even a song that they wrote. It was just an aside on the stage. And and suddenly the whole world
they're getting death
changes.
Threats. And, and now they're just called the Chicks.
Now they're just called the Chicks.
That wasn't a joke. I'm not making fun of them for doing that. It's just a statement. Well, we've kind of rambled on a few different things. Anything else about the music on this album? Although, it's great that I think it takes a special album to get people to talk about this, right? Which is good.
Yeah. One question I have is if the closing track, a little short little ditty, Cripple Creek Ferry, if that is a nod at all to Up on Cripple Creek by the band, which I think is based around, if Wikipedia's any help, an old folk song about Cripple Creek, Appalachian style folk tune from around 1900. I'm curious if there's like, maybe in folk circles, that is just like a go-to, almost a trope that you can use that phrase, and I'm just ignorant of that tradition or that genre, but it's interesting to me that a similarly timed album would have Cripple Creek by another Canadian artist.
Is that from their Brown self-titled album?
Is that right, or is it Big Pink? I think it is. I think it is the self-titled.
Yeah, it's on the Brown album, which was what, 69, so a year before this.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that too when I saw the title. The like, oh,
Ferry. Yeah.
I can't think of another Cripple Creek that I've ever heard of other than that.
Apparently, there's a small mining town in Colorado. I learned that today as well, trying to figure get to the bottom of it. So who knows?
I'd say in general, I find this one a little more, maybe a little more moving, and a little just personally, I don't know. It just triggers me a little more emotionally.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a bit moodier than Harvest.
Yeah, Harvest is very good. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's a great album. I like this one a little better.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have a really good explanation for it. I just I don't know, some things I just enjoyed a little more. And they're both great. They're both fantastic. I think if you put two in front of me, said pick one, I would pick this one. Mm-hmm. I'd pick both if I could. We should pick a favorite track. This could be tough.
We need to talk about this because
Neil, in his principal
stance, has said no to Spotify, so we can't even pick a track.
Man.
We could talk about it anecdotally if he were on Spotify, what one we might pick. But
I meant to mention this because a couple times I went to open up, I should listen to that album again as we, in the weeks coming up to prepare, open up Spotify, typed in Neil Young, nothing comes up, and go, there was that thing. Yeah. And if you're in the dark here, and I don't, just in case, it was, in the last couple of years that Neil Young went public and said, I don't like what Joe Rogan is saying on his podcast, which is on Spotify, spreading, this is Neil Young's words, spreading misinformation and having guests spreading misinformation about the pandemic and about the virus, et cetera, et cetera. So Spotify, I'm giving you an opportunity to pull him from your platform, or I'm pulling all my music. And they did not. And so in a very short period of time, he did.
All his music was gone. And he's not alone either. I think
following suit, Joni Mitchell did, right? She says, if Neil's going to do it, I'm going to do it too.
Yep.
And they didn't do anything. So I'm not saying they had no response, but they didn't pull Joe Rogan's podcast. So, so she pulled her music too. I don't know if there were other artists or other, those were two, I think, really, really big artists with large catalogs who were like, nope, it's coming off. You can find a few tracks if it's like on
compilation or something.
You might sneak in, but that's right. So hey, good point. We can't do that.
But we could at least speculate. What would you pick, Mike, if
really tough. Tell me why. I'm going to do Tell Me Why.
Oh, okay.
Is that yours? Was that yours?
No, that's a good choice. I'm torn too.
So many good songs. My goodness.
I think for another sort of like shift in feel, I'll go with Oh Lonesome Me.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Man, there's so many good ones.
Some good ones.
I When You Dance, I Can Really Love. Just there's this kind of like droning, you know, these bass notes and down, you know, like the low, the fifth below. Man, it's just, it's a cool sound.
Yep.
Southern Man, one of my favorites. After the Gold Rush, so cool. Only Love. It's so good.
Some good stuff. Album.
Okay, moving on. What has aged well? What hasn't aged well? Another interesting question.
It sounds like Neil Young. His voice is so unique. He didn't sound like too many of his contemporaries, even when this music was coming out.
That was my thought too, is I wanted to say about his voice, but his voice has always been unique. You're right, it's Neil Young.
There's something about the inclusion of a harmonica that just doesn't get, unless it's like country music, maybe we just don't hear a lot of harmonica in popular music these days. And so maybe some of the instrumentation might be just a little bit dated in some way.
Yeah, I think some of the guitar sounds maybe sound a little. I don't know. To me, it obviously doesn't sound like, you know, a modern rock album.
Sure.
Obviously. But so much. I mean, the political themes are relevant.
Yes.
And the, you know, the ecological themes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's relevant. You know, love songs, always relevant.
Yeah.
So I think the lyrical content is fairly relevant and transfers fairly well.
We've talked about how honesty and authenticity always play. Right?
That was Bob Brown, right? It's always relevant.
Yeah. And I think that's the case with this one.
I think in general the songs have a good rock and roll like backbone. So that's like, you know, there's fairly standard. I mean, I like how Tell Me Why messes with timing a bit.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's fairly standard, straight up and down rock, whether it's 3/4 or 4/4. I think a lot of it holds up really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's rock. You know what era it is. You could probably almost pinpoint the year. Yet, it still, I think, is transferable. So,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it's very relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree with that.
It's number 90 on the list. How do you feel about that? And I have a feeling we're going to compare it to Harvest. Harvest, which is number 72.
It has fallen a little bit. It was in the 70s on the prior lists.
It was higher than Harvest.
Yeah, right? Good point. Yeah, it was higher than Harvest.
It was
just
higher.
Slightly. But higher. I don't mind it here. I feel somewhat differently than you. I think I like Harvest a bit more.
Yep.
So the order is correct. As far as like, I'm really fascinated by this piece of deja vu sparking solo careers for four people all at once. And wondering why that one isn't a whole lot higher.
It's very good.
It's very good.
It's very good.
And so I guess I find myself content with this ranking, but making me question some other things and why they're the way they are.
Man, these Neil Young albums, yeah, they're just so good to me. I could see them higher. It's not everybody's bag, right? But just so much impact on rock and folk rock musical activism. You know, mm-hmm. like Neil Young is kind of one of the poster children of speaking out politically through music. So, I mean, I would prefer to see it higher. We'll talk about some of the other. We'll talk about his other albums here. We always ask what other albums. He's got a few on the list, quite a lot on the list as a part of different bands, but this was 71, then 74, and now 90. I kind of like it up there. We've already done Harvest, which is 72, and that was 78, so it went up a little bit. We've got Tonight's the Night, from 1975 at number 302. That was on the other list, about the same spot. Then we've got On the Beach from 1974 at 311. That's a new addition to the list. So kind of grouped closely together. And then there's two other albums, which are Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Yeah.
So at 296, Rust Never Sleeps from 79, which has gone up, was on the list. And also Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere from 1969, Neil Young with Crazy Horse.
At his number debut.
400. Yeah, is that considered his first solo album?
I think Wikipedia at least puts that one up as the one that came before, after the Gold Rush. So for whatever that's worth.
So that's 407. And then we also mentioned Deja Vu. That's CSNY, but that's at 220.
Yeah.
So we get to talk about Neil in some iteration and five more times, which is great, but not for a while, not till we get to 220, when actually the next one is Deja Vu. We were talking about it, but it's going to be for a while. Not going to be for a while. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Ben, before we wrap it up?
No, sure has been nice to get a little bit more CanCon on the, on the list. And we always aren't, we're not very sure of what it's going to be like talking about an album we both like. So I'm glad we got a good conversation in for this one.
I'm feeling content right now talking about this. So next week,
closed another decade.
Yep. We're going to do our re-rank, where we talk about these last 10 albums and shuffle them around to how we would have done those 10, and talk about, our favorite 10 albums of the 90 that we've done so far. See if any from this group of 10 have cracked that list. And then the next, you want to tell us what the next album we're doing when we come back after that re-rank? Number 91.
Number 91 on the top 500 album list is Darkness on the Edge of Town by Bruce Springsteen.
I'm interested to do that, especially because I know that the other one we've done so far, Born to Run, has become one of your favorites. So I'm really interested to...
Yeah, and a tie to this one. I think the keyboard player wound up being in the E Street Band. I don't know if it was for Darkness on the Edge of Town or not. But
Neat.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
Really, really interesting. Until that time, when we do our re-rank and when we do the Springsteen album, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you. And we certainly hope you'll join us again right here on the SoundLogic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.